Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, tonight, my special guest is Nancy Nelson. Nancy has been dealing with the challenge of Alzheimer's disease for a little over 2 years now, and she is one of 12 advocates speaking on behalf of the Alzheimer's Association, recruiting, mobilizing, and activating people across the nation to advance Alzheimer's awareness and make it a priority for our nation through legislation at the federal and state levels. The mission is also to dispel the stigma attached to Alzheimer's disease by telling their own very personal stories, which makes the vision a much more personal message and an inspired call for action. Nancy loves participating in family activities, hiking, and out-of-door activities, and she served for many years in the airline industry, the funeral industry, and the insurance industry. And now that she's actively retired, she spends time as an author, a speaker, and an advocate, and she has written her first book called Blue River Apple, which is an exploration of Alzheimer's through poetry. And so I'd like to introduce Nancy. Nancy, once again, how are you tonight?
Thank you so much, David, for having me on your show. And I'm just great. Thank you for asking. I'm super duper.
That is wonderful to hear. And I'm wondering if we could start off with you reading one of your favorite poems from your book, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay, so let me, if it's all fine with you, let me start with the very first poem that I ever wrote. And let me, if
very
I may,
good.
Just tell how it happened. How did I start writing? I got the
diagnosis. I would love to hear it.
Okay. I got the diagnosis in 2013, a girlfriend and I went across country in her little two-seater Miata with the top down, and we were just having a good old time. And a friend gifted us a book called Still Alice. And we, when the top wasn't down and the radio wasn't blaring, I was reading aloud the book Still Alice. And when we got home from that trip, which was a three-week-long trip, I said to my daughter, you know, I really think I need to go in and I need to have this checked. I wasn't thinking right and things were happening. I was getting lost in the car and my words were not coming and just wasn't like me. So that's, the diagnosis came and I started waking up between 3 and 5 a.m. each and every morning. My eyes flew open, grabbed the pencil, and I started writing poetry. And, David, I never read poetry, let alone write it. This is the very first poem that I wrote, and here it is. Blue River Apple, today's journey. Develop courage. Splash on a smile. Be who I want to be. Not afraid of who I am becoming. To awake at night, fearful of forgetting important and precious things like people, dates, times, appointments. I am not in control. Please help me, God. Thoughts jumble. Words disappear. Times mix up. promises go astray. When I hear, where are you? Are you coming? Eyes water. Stomach churns. Humbled in disbelief. I know I have done it again. Do I stay home, cancel, quit, or fight the rite of passage through the fog? Silently I say, I am not what I appear. I am sorry for what you see. Breathe in courage, splash on a smile, struggle to remember. I must find pieces of myself and revel in who I know I am. Chin up, treading lightly in new, uncharted waters. At times, I catch sideways glances back and forth. Perhaps even your voice impatient. I understand. But wait. We stand together, separate. Can you hear me? I have so much to tell you. I try to mask the imperfections, a dab of foundation, a blush of pink, dressed in clothes, jewelry, and resolve. Daily, though, I have to make sense of where I am on the sliding scale of blue, river, apple. I want to be positive. Positive, I am productive. I am loving and beloved. I am grateful, creative, and alive. Therefore, I am blessed with a voice to tell my inner story. Blue River.
Beautiful.
Thank
I love
you.
It. And it's amazing that that was your very first attempt at poetry. That's one of my favorite ones in your book.
Oh, what? Thank you.
Yes. I
Maybe
think
I
it's a.
There,
no, no way. But it's obvious that you had some real inspiration going on. Now, when you come wide awake, do you still wake up at 3 to 5 in the morning and write?
I do. Not as often, you know, David, as I did in the beginning. Not as often. I have a second book that will be published in the next 2-3 months. It's different now. It happens. It just doesn't happen every day.
Was it like
Am
a compulsion? Yes, go ahead.
I'm sure.
No, I was just wondering if you felt compelled to write. Did you have any idea what you were going to do that first day when you woke up?
No. I just knew that I don't. I still today. It was. You know, it was something far greater than myself that had a hold of my hand. I cannot remember why there was a yellow pad there, why there was a pen there, and what made me know to pick it up and to begin writing. I don't know. Why do things like that happen to a person?
Mm.
And it just happened over and over and over again, and finally I decided to show it to a couple of friends, and they said, "You know, Nancy, this is really okay. Maybe this is something that you ought to have somebody look at that will help other people." And you know, and that's the blessing in all of this, David, is that if I can help someone else walk this path, however, or even if it's Alzheimer's, if it's something else, a diagnosed disease. Then it's okay. It's okay that I'm walking the path. If I'm being of service and being helpful.
I love that. Well, I would certainly think that it was a form of therapy for yourself as well.
Absolutely has been. Absolutely has been. I tell everybody, you know, you need the journal. And I know some people don't. I off and on. You know, in my lifetime, have journaled at different times. And it's just a form of journaling.
Well, let's back up, if we can, back up
sure.
in time to when you went into the doctor. And I presume you went through a round of memory tests?
I did. You know, it's a process of elimination. The way they determine it, and actually, you know, doctors will tell you they don't really know until you've passed whether you've actually had Alzheimer's, and they can dissect your brain.
Yes.
it's a process of elimination. You know, I had the MRI and the brain scan and this test, and I had gone to two different regular doctors, and both had said the same thing. And then I went to an alternative doctor, and I'm sort of into alternatives. I like alternatives, and so I became real active in my own health program. I did not get on the medications that were offered the second that it was out of the doctor's, off the doctor's lips. He had his pad out and he wanted me to take prescription medication, and I said, you know, far too early for me to think about that. And I'm not, I, you know, please let me give the disclaimer. You know, I'm just me. I just know about me. And so I'm not saying people shouldn't take the medications that are offered. I'm just saying for me, not yet. Not.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I'm not an expert. I only know about Nancy. And so I don't mean to come across as a know-it-all. I don't. I'm learning just like everybody else that's walking the path.
Well, a couple of questions.
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, you go ahead. Please.
I was just going to say, you know, when we think about the brain malfunctioning or the cells dying off, and the brain is our 3-pound universe. That runs our whole body. There are 100 billion neurons, 500 trillion synapses, 300 mile an hour speed, and 70,000 thoughts per day. It's 24/7. And when something goes a little amiss with that, and I'm almost 72 years old, so when something goes a little amiss with that, it's no wonder I have to think. What do you think?
Well, I think that's pretty amazing. I have heard that we have that many thoughts a day, and one of the things that always makes me pause and reflect is how we can take charge of some of those thoughts so that we can live a more positive life, because so many thoughts that pass through the brain seem to be inclined in negative directions for whatever reasons. I think it's perhaps part of the human condition. And my challenge is to remain as aware as possible so that I can choose positive thoughts and positive actions. And I loved what you said about your position of how important it is to remain of service to others, because I think that ultimately is what it's all about. When we lead self-centered lives, our lives lose meaning. And when we lead lives of service, then we're here for a reason. And I like to believe that we all can find a reason for being if we just focus outward. And it sounds like that's what you do.
That is what that is. How I'm sure I have lapses just like everybody else. You know, some days I have to pull up those big girl panties and say, you know what, just I was feeling bad the other day, had something happen, and I thought, I'm always making mistakes. What the heck? And so I'm driving kind of aimlessly thinking, get over it. And I see this gentleman in a wheelchair outside UMC. And with the hospital, and he looks like he's out cold. And I think, okay, you could be there, right? So I'm going to go get my nails done, and I think, okay, this is going to make me feel better. I walk in there. There is a lady that looks like she's had surgery on her jaw, on her chin, and she's swollen and not looking very good. And I think, there you go, Nancy. Second example in 10 minutes. Shame on you. So anyway. You know, we can always look around and we can always see people that are far worse off than we are, no matter what it is that we have. And I'm grateful to be speaking with you today, David. I'm grateful to be able to perhaps, you know, inform people a little bit about some options or, you know. So I'm glad to be here. It's a joy.
Well, it's a joy to have you. And before I ask you the questions I had in mind, I'd like to just pick up on the theme of gratitude and ask you what role that plays in your life.
Do you know I sit in gratitude every single day? I have spent my life moving. By moving, I mean, you know, I always had 10 things to do, so I was, you know, managing all kinds of bubbles in the air and family and job and, you know, busy stuff. And now that I have been forced a little bit to slow down, I see that, oh my gosh, there's so much bliss in a smile or in taking an extra couple minutes to say something nice to somebody in the grocery store. It's not that I don't want to give the impression that I walked around not a nice person, but I'm saying, though, that with the diagnosis has come an understanding and a belief that it's all about out there. We can't take anything with us when we leave here. Well, we don't take our clothes, we don't take our homes or our cars, we don't take all of the gatherings that we have around us. The only thing that we take is who we are and what we've given.
I'm wondering, do you feel more present to the moment now than you used to?
Absolutely. Oh, my goodness, mm-hmm. Yes. Absolutely. I'm not here right now talking to you with six other things on my mind. I'm here talking mm-hmm. to you, David, so that you and I can have a meaningful conversation.
Well, let's back up for just a moment, if we can, to that day
sure.
when you got the diagnosis. What mm-hmm. were the feelings that you had at that point in time?
Well, my feeling all along, even when I got the first diagnosis and said, yes, you've got a problem. And then I go, and my youngest daughter has been with me. I have two daughters. Both are very supportive. My youngest had gone to all of the doctors with me and has walked. And we share a home together, so we are together more. And she said to me, Mom, do you really want to go in there and find this out? For Pete's sake, you're 70 years old. And I said, you know, yes and no, but I do believe that my dad had Alzheimer's and passed from it. And that was in 2004. I have to look at the front of my book, 2004, because I dedicated the book to him. He was such a
mm-hmm.
great dad. And it's 2002, Dad passed with Alzheimer's. And I knew that didn't know very much about it. And so I said, so I didn't want my kids to have the feeling that I've had ever since 2002. I've always regretted that I didn't know more about what was going on. And so my belief is that I wanted my children to walk with me. I wanted them to understand so that now, when only sometimes they don't make sense, that they can work into it, that we can make the decisions that need to be made, that they can see what's happening and that I can correct it. You know, David, my worst fear is at the last days of this, that I'm going to be ornery and ugly and have no filter and that I'm just going to speak out awful. And mm-hmm. it happens to people. And there are not all of the people that it happens to are nasty people, obviously. So
right.
it happens to us. It happens to poor and caregivers. God bless caregivers. They're, I apologize, you hear the dog. I'm going to take care of that.
Don't worry about it. I've got mine here, too. And he sometimes speaks up, too.
Oh, my gosh. So anyway, where was I, David, before I got on the dog issue?
Oh, you were talking about how God bless the caregivers.
Yes, God bless the caregivers. Because you know what? What would we do without them? I speak to caregivers all the time. and they're sitting on the edge of their seat wanting to get some information and wanting to understand. And they're lovely, lovely people, and they've got a stranger they're taking care of that's yelling at them, and they don't understand why. So we do have to have some conversation between them and me, them and us, that says, mm-hmm. hey, you know, this is what's happening to us. So that's what I wanted my kids to have. I wanted them to have the benefit of knowing as we went along the path. And so my daughter and I thought that we had a home. We thought we were home free. I thought the first doctor would say there was no problem. I thought the second doctor would say there was no problem. And neither one did. And when the second one said, you have early onset Alzheimer's, we could hardly get out the door to the car and hold one another and hug and cry. Because even though you might expect that, it was devastating to my young daughter and devastating to me, because I never had had anything wrong with me before, just before that, the year before I had an aortic valve replacement. So I never had anything wrong with me up until 2012. And so my kids were used to somebody that was running and hiking and, you know, done a triathlon. So it was all out of all of our realms, and I felt like they needed to be prepared that this was a mm-hmm. disease we have no control over, personally. Mm-hmm. Except that we know now, for those listening, we know that diet plays a really heavy part in this. We know that staying active socially plays a really heavy part in this. We know that I say yes all the time, and sometimes I want to say no and I want to stay home, and then I say, pull up those big girl panties, get out there, put a smile on your face. You got to stay active. You got to play the games, you know, the jigsaw puzzles and the Sudoku and all of the internet games. We have to, and that's you and your neighbor and me and my neighbor. I mean, we all have to do this.
Yes.
Because this disease is growing like crazy. It isn't just happening to me. So.
Well, I lost my. No, that's okay, hon. You answered a question I was going to ask you, and I had something else that had come to mind that's gone by the wayside, but that's all right. I was going to make the comment, which you did yourself, that it's important for everybody to be out there, because I think that, I believe it is so important to stay connected to one another, that no man or woman is an island, and that when we isolate ourselves, we not only deprive ourselves, but we deprive other people of the gifts that we have to share in this world. And so whether or not somebody has a challenge like Alzheimer's, I'm a firm believer that it's important to be out there and be part of the mix.
Good. And that was my belief. There are sometimes when I look at this and my kids are upset, you know, I can tell that they're upset and I'm speaking a lot and bringing a lot of confusion in their world, that I think, gosh, have I done the right thing? Have I done the right thing? My core belief in my quiet moments is there is no other way. Because there are so many people out there, David, that don't want to talk about this dirty little thing. They don't want to say that their mom, their dad, their aunt, their uncle, their grandparent is acting strange. They don't want to admit that there is a problem. There is a stranger standing in their kitchen and she or he has just been outrageously unlike themselves and vocal. And they don't want to tell anybody. And I'm saying to them with love and with somebody that's walking through it, the earlier you figure it out, the earlier you get the message, the earlier you at least check it out, doesn't always mean the worst, the better off you are. Then you know that the diet and the games and the exercise, and you know that what to do, and you get people that support you in doing it.
Let's talk about the diet. What's important about diet?
Well, okay. True confession on radio. Okay, true confession.
Okay.
I love food. I talked to a gentleman that had owned several care facilities, Alzheimer's care facilities, and I said to him on the phone, I said, what would be the one thing you would tell me starting out along this path, this rocky path? And he said, sweets, I'm quoting him, sweets are killers, sweets are killers, sweets are killers. Now, that was 2 years ago, and I know that. And do you think, I mean, I'm sneaking this and sneaking that. And I just read an article today that said, look, if you're eating vegetables and fruits and you're cooking at home and you know, you're using coconut oil and you're using grape seed oil and, you know, you're staying away from fried red meats and all of, you know, use common sense and you sneak a little bit, it's all good. And, you know, I just ate that up. Oh, my God, that's what I've been waiting to hear. I'm okay.
Well, that's what I was waiting to hear. One of my favorite pastimes is to bake, and I just finished baking 40 dozen Christmas cookies the other week.
You'd be my friend.
Well, I hope I haven't done a disservice to my loved ones that I gave presents of cookies to. But, you know, it's good to have a sense of humor.
Yes, you do. Of course. You've got to be able to laugh at yourself and take responsibility for ourselves.
Let's talk about some of the ways that you have empowered yourself. You've already talked about some, but whatever comes to mind, I'd love to hear it.
You know, I think, as you had originally mentioned, I think writing the book was really a boost for me because it got my feelings out and sometimes a little blunt. And now in writing the second book, I would say that I'm writing differently. So I think that, and we've said this, being of service, I think speaking at the Alzheimer's organizations, at the in-home healthcare facilities, making sure that my day is spent with myself being out there, not being afraid to say, oh, gee, this is a silly thing that I did. Or, you know, my belief is this, or that. And I'm no expert, but that's how I'm working through it for me. That's how our family is working through it. It's really, really is a key to finding some peace within yourself, because I have spent time at an Alzheimer's caregiver support group for a couple of years, and I have learned how those caregivers feel. And sometimes they come into those meetings, David, and they're angry. Sometimes they come in and they're crying. Sometimes they're joyful because it's been a good day or a good week. Sometimes they're understanding, and sometimes they don't want to understand. Sometimes they're just been yelled at or cleaned the bathroom 16 times, and they just, you know, they're just a little ouchy. And I've watched all of this, so I feel like I have the benefit of seeing that side of it, which has helped me now walk through it in a different way. I sometimes, and God help me when I lose my filter. You know what I mean? When
yes.
I can't stop myself from saying something. Because you know how you think something. I was reading about your program, which is just an awesome concept, I think, that we don't judge. We stand beside, and we're different, perhaps, but underneath, we're all the same. And so we all have feelings sometimes that says, oh, geez, well, that, you know, why did that happen? And who did that and all that? right? And so
absolutely.
If you have no filter, you're liable to just and get angry and, you know. So I think, in the moment anyway, there'll come a day when I'm told that I won't be able to hold it back. But in the moment, I can see both sides, and so it stops me from getting angry. It stops me from saying something that I might regret the second it gets out of my mouth. And especially to those that are around me and caring for me and loving me, and I should be rude and nasty. And I know most people don't want to be that way. They're not doing it because they take pleasure in it. It's something that's happening to the dead brain cells. And you know, it doesn't filter down. And you know, I know. We need, here, there's something. We need people to understand that 50 years ago, the big C was cancer. And they didn't have cures for it. So 50 years later, we have Alzheimer's. We don't have a cure for it. We haven't had a new medication out in 12 years. There are no cures. There's no remedies. We need research done. We need people to, if everybody gave $5, my goodness, what would that do towards Alzheimer's research? Go on Alzheimer's.com, ALZ.com, and you don't have to give a lot of money, but every little bit helps, and that's what it's going to take in order for us to be able to break through whatever is going on. You know, there's 5 million people in the United States that has Alzheimer's. 5.4. And it's raising, and younger people are being affected. So we have to get a handle on this.
Well, maybe this would be a good point in time for you to put out your own contact information for anybody that would be interested in getting in touch with you, that's either listening live or that will listen later. You had mentioned earlier that you'd be willing to do that.
I am willing to do that. You betcha. You could go to my website, which is blueriverapple.com. You can go to Nancy@BlueRiverApple.com, and we can have conversations that way. You can, and I will talk to anyone that has a question, and if I can help in any way, you can go on the internet, like I say. I have the 800 number right here, but of course, in the moment, I can't seem to find it. I do have it. So the 24/7 helpline for those, and I know, you know, there's lots of people that don't want to give any information out. And, you know, they will talk to you. They will help you. The Alzheimer's Association is there to listen. And I have what I call ALZ Cafe, A-L-Z Cafe. I have it every other month here in Las Vegas, and we have people come in and talk. We don't take any names if they don't want to give them, and we give them all kinds of support. 800-272-3900.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Maybe this would be a good time for you to read another one of your poems.
Okay. I will be happy to do that. The book ended at the 7-month mark, so I would be happy to read how I was feeling when I finished this book. So
that would be great.
That means the book came out in August of 2014, and so this ended about the end, middle part of that year. 7 months in, after diagnosis of A, it is in the corner, the farthest uppermost of my messy mind, that perhaps I do not have early onset A. Maybe my memory jab, word hesitations, enunciation miscues, forgetfulness, the lot, is extended brain fog, the residue of anesthesia intake. during aortic valve exchange, an overload on a compromised porous brain, or maybe it's my system suffering from not enough nutrients, the green and gluten thing. Perhaps it is nearly old age. Would that change what's happening to me? Is it better to have dementia than the starting of AIDS? No, but it would be wonderfully awesome to gracefully accept old age, and I promise I will. I've always felt extremely lucky, showing no bad joints or wrinkles, but what does it matter, one for the other? Ooh, just think. What if several months ago I had taken the drugs from the crisp, white-coated neurologist, pen perched ever so ready to prescribe? What happens to those of us taking wrong drugs for something we don't even have? Are we helped in any old way? Am I in total denial right now? Am I? I change moods with the wind, but would you understand if I shared in this moment on this day? It's only my fear of age inspiring these anguished tears to drop. I'm scared.
Thank you. Maybe that would be a good topic to talk about first, our fears, and then let's talk about faith. What
let's
kinds of fears have you faced along the way, and how have you dealt with them?
Oh, my gosh. Fear. Okay, so to understand my fear, you have to kind of know who I am, and I have always been very, very self-sufficient, had a loving family, worked, made my own mistakes, lived up to my own mistakes, and lived a very nice life. Didn't ask for special things that I didn't work through or I couldn't afford. So that's kind of who I was. So when this came to me, I decided that I needed to accept the possibility that I had what I call the diagnosis of A. But I don't accept and I don't acknowledge that I have Alzheimer's. I say to you that I have been diagnosed with it because my belief is that everybody needs that window up there that has a bright shining light up at the very top of each room so that I can escape if I need to. And I believe that there is help up there. And so that is heaven bound. And so that has kept me in that there is some reason, and I don't know why some people just sit in a chair and become a minion. Could it be the drug? I would just ask. Or why some of us fight, but I fight. I am not going to let somebody in a white coat tell me that I have something and there's no cure and the only thing I can do is take drugs. Sorry. That's just me. That is working for me right now. And I can only talk to you about today. I'm so grateful to be here today and to be able to carry on a conversation with you and perhaps help others. So I believe I have faith. I'm not overly religious. I just believe that there is someone there that is holding my hand and that I'm doing the right thing for many, many people that are scared and afraid. Some are courageous and some are not. We're all here together. We're all here together and we have to be able to talk. We have to be able to say, you know, I got this brainy thing going on up here, and it's got holes in it, but I'm going to work through it, and you know, and together we can find a cure. $5, $10, you know, would just help. And imagine all the money that we send over to other countries. Maybe now we could help our own country. Just a thought. And then we can help the other countries. I mean, because we help, we, the United States is such a generous people. So generous.
That's true. Well, you know, what you just said was very inspirational. And I love the fact that you do not affirm that you have a disease, that you have a diagnosis. I think that's a form of empowerment. And without that, do lose hope when we give in to what may be perceived as a death sentence, what may be, you know, however you want to look at it. I'm really impressed and inspired by your stance towards it, and that you're a fighter, not a quitter. You're more than a survivor. You're a person who's thriving with the diagnosis, and you're not letting that get you down. And certainly I'm not going to discount whatever feelings of frustration and anger that you've had along the way. Your poetry seems to have been a wonderful vent for some of those feelings, and I think it's so important for people to get those toxic feelings out of them. Don't you believe that?
I do. I think telling your family or someone that's close to you and having some support also does that, don't you?
Yes.
I think they say so many people, they have said over and over again to me, my gosh, you're so lucky to have all of your family members around you. Some families, you know, they don't want to hear it. They don't, it's time consuming. You know, it's worrisome. So they, you know, it's tough times out there. Everybody's working hard in order to just bring a paycheck home. And so there are people that have, you know, bigger hurdles than my own, David. So believe me, I'm grateful. I am very, very grateful.
Well, there's some real truth to that expression there, but for the grace of God go I.
No kidding. No kidding.
Yeah. We need to, as I see it, we need to maintain an attitude of gratitude, because that's what raises us up, raises our level of consciousness, our vibrations, if you will, that can keep us aligned with our joy. And I believe that God wants us to lead an abundant life filled with joy and love and all good things, and that we're the only ones that bring about those things that don't feel good by dwelling on the negative instead of dwelling on the positive. You know, would you talk a little bit about a little bit more about that aspect in your life and how you dwell on the positive?
Sure. I believe it's a choice. And I think I've always felt this way. I have always felt and lived my life that if you are someplace that you don't like and you cannot change it, you've looked at it, you know, look, see, move, and you cannot change it, then you need to pick yourself up and move somewhere else so that you don't bring yourself down and everybody around you down. So if you're at a job and it's a ho-hum sort of thing every darn day, find yourself another job before you quit the one you have, but be looking for something that brings you joy. And so I've lived my whole life that way. And it was, I don't know if the diagnosis, I can say it was an easy switch. I can say, though, that I had been doing it for all of my life, and therefore it's the only thing that I know. I had two wonderful parents, David, two wonderful parents, and I know not everybody has that. But underneath all of what we go through, and we all have something in our lives that has, you know, tough to take or was handed to us and we didn't ask for it, if we can just rise above the catastrophicness, that if there is such a word, of that, and see that if like my trip past the hospital or walking in to get my nails done. You know, we can in every corner find someone that is so much worse off than we. And so if we can take that glimmer and say, oh my gosh, I'm lucky today because I'm not in a wheelchair and in front of a hospital and looking like I'm passed out, you know. So always something. And I do that. That's what I do. It is just one, two, three. Now, I don't want you to think that I never get down because I once in a while, I have a short pity party, but it honestly doesn't last too long because there's really no point. There's always a window at the top of the room.
Yeah, absolutely. What are your biggest challenges today?
Do you know, when you decide to out yourself, people treat you differently. That, you know, people used to listen to me, David. People used to, you know, when I had something to say, they listened. You know, we had eye contact. They listened. Now it seems to be of question. So it's not quite the same as it used to be. There's a little doubt that maybe and there's doubt in myself. My own armor is so chinked that I will say something, and then and as you probably noticed getting ready for today to talk with you, I mean, I sent an email and said, okay, so it's you know, 4:30, this. So I have to just redo it to make sure in my own mind that I'm right. But so many times I'm not. So many times I'm not right, and so my armor is chinked. And so I have to fight that. I have to say, hey, wait a minute. If you walk into a room thinking that your armor is chinked and that what you say isn't correct, then you might as well stay home in the rocker. And I ain't going to do it, David. I ain't going to.
Good.
So
that's good.
That is the hardest thing. It's not being who maybe I used to be.
Are there some ways that life is better for you today?
I don't know that I would say that life is better. I would certainly say, as you had said, you know, that I have found a way of making it very, very positive, and that it is from this diagnosis that I have found great joy in helping others. And that is, I retired, you know, from insurance, and that's where I find my peace and my joy is if I'm going to talk on the radio or if I'm speaking in person or going to one of the in-home care facilities. That's where my words might get jumbled and get foggy, but I can stand up and speak. And so there's joy. There's joy in that. I'm determined and I'm focused, and people don't, and you know, people come up to me and say, there's nothing wrong with you. And I say, thanks, great. I'm glad to hear that. Thanks. Because I'll never, ever fight for the right to say that I have something. No thanks.
Well, you are very focused. You know, if I didn't know of your diagnosis, I wouldn't be able to say that there was a single thing, quote unquote, wrong with you, you know. You're extremely lucid and very in touch with yourself and the world around you, and you're able to tell your story with great passion and with great clarity.
Thank you. I hope this goes on forever and ever and ever and ever.
Well, I hope so, too. Have you noticed any changes since you received the diagnosis? What kinds of changes?
Yeah. More and more of the chink in the armor. I get lost. I get lost in the car all the time. I drive well, and I'm very careful about all of that. My words, and you don't notice it. I don't notice it either when I'm when I'm speaking or when I'm talking on behalf of the Alzheimer's Association, I can stand up, like I was saying, and speak. But at other times, my words don't come to me like they used to. I can't think of a word, and I can't spell that word. And it takes me 10 times longer to scan a piece of paper and to put a book together, perhaps, than it would any other person alive. It just takes me a lot longer. I don't see things as well either. That's interesting. It's almost like I don't see it. I can walk into a room and I don't see fine things. I don't know how to explain that. So there's lots of little things that I get real quiet. Sometimes I get very quiet. I just as soon sit rather than talk. I know you can't believe that, right? Yeah. You can't believe that, David. But I notice that if I'm, you know, with a group of people, I'm much more quiet than I used to be. And sometimes I don't speak because I'm not sure. I can't remember. Ooh, and I don't remember names. So people come up and talk to me and I'm so sad that I can't say their name to them, that I don't remember what we talked about. And so I have learned that it's okay. I can say, you know, can you remind me your name and maybe give me a clue as to what we might have talked about? And so that kind of thing goes on. And it's more today than it might have been. And maybe not. I mean, what the heck? I'm not going to claim that either, David.
Well, what are the other coping mechanisms that you use?
I don't put as many things on my plate. I try to limit how many things I put in my day. I used to have 15 things in my day. And now, and I tell people, boy, I've really cut back, and they say, really? I don't believe it. But, I don't put five things a day on my plate, meaning that, you know, we had this interview. I helped a friend earlier for a couple of hours, and this morning I was working on a project. But because I set myself up for failure when I do that, and so I don't do it. And every once in a while when I've made a great mistake, then I say, okay, so how did this occur? And I go back step by step. All right. You know, I was multitasking. I didn't pay attention. I didn't go prepared. I just slowed down. A little bit. And it's
well, you know, in a sense, I think that's a great lesson for all of us, because we tend to lead such complicated lives and are so focused on doing instead of just being. After all, we're human beings, not human doings. And, you know, it's an interesting thought that, you know, that you've had this situation which you've learned to slow yourself down. And I'm wondering if that has somehow enhanced other parts of your life.
Oh, of course. I spend more time with my grandchildren instead of working. I'm with my grandchildren. I talk to the neighbors, where I used to say, hello, how are you? And, you know, a quick something. And now I'll ask them how they are. And yes, in many, many ways, I have found joy. I joined a book club as one of my activities, and I enjoy reading all kinds of different books that we choose throughout the year. That's a wonderful thing that I never took advantage of. You look at my bookshelves, they are all business and motivational and self-help books. And now I actually have some fiction and some other kind of books up there. So it's a process, David. It's not something that came overnight and I just suddenly changed. I think we make little inroads every day.
Well, more power to you. It sounds like you lead a very rich life indeed. I'm wondering if you would have one more poem that you could share with us before we start to come to a close.
Sure. Okay, let me, since we talked about, a minute here. Okay, so let me talk about my phone and misplacing things. Oh, my goodness. I misplace things like it drives me crazy. And no wonder people walking this path of VAs get so frustrated. This one is called Searching for Signs. And it says, God damn it, please, no disrespect meant. But where is my phone? Madly thrusting through my purse, car seat, floor. In this morning of people I met, errands I ran, somewhere I have left it behind. Again. I'm as helpless as the mournful train whistle before it escapes down the lonely distant track. Again. Woo, woo, woo. How do I function? I cannot even remember to hang on to a phone. My memory line. Am I losing it? Am I the fragile train whistle that I fear? Times ago, I could have shrugged my shoulders, shook my head, laughed. Today, not so much. I'm hurting from way within. Screaming full bore, stop it, don't you get it? I'm not laughing anymore. If only the memory line would fray left, just deliver a personal reprimand or two. God damn it, I mean no disrespect. But I really, really don't want to lose, misplace, leave behind, forget my phone ever again.
I like
it. Does it feel my frustration?
Yes, it does. It does. I could relate, even though At a much different level, I'm sure. There's no way I could relate to what you're going through. But as another human being, I can relate to the feelings that you put forth in that poem. So I thank you for that. Are there any final words that you'd like to share before we close?
You know, a quickie just to say, because I am a woman, and women and Alzheimer's, two-thirds of the 5 million seniors with Alzheimer's disease are women, and women are not only more likely to have Alzheimer's, but they're also more likely to be caregivers to those with Alzheimer's. And so women, not that men don't get it, but usually we have a hand in the kitchen, and it starts with fixing different foods and being aware. And I'm grateful that you've given me time to talk, David, and I'm grateful to get to know you, and thank you so very, very much.
Well, thank you, Nancy. Back at you. So, once again, we come to a... Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own mind. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we allow it to be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Thanks, Nancy.
God bless, David.
You too.
Same to you. All right. Thanks.